Side 16, A Fire Upon the Deep, by Werner Venge, continuing on page 360. The castle's ramparts appeared abandoned, and the battle around the walls had died. "What news?" he said impatiently at the sky. Ravna,
"I still can't see much around you, Vam. Large numbers of Tynes, probably the enemy, are retreating northwards. Looks like a fast, coordinated retreat. Nothing like the fight to the last that we were seeing before. There are no fires within the castle, or evidence of remaining packs either."
"Decision." Fom turned back toward the others. He struggled to turn sharp commands into reasonable-sounding requests. "Pilgrim, Pilgrim, I need Woodcarver's help. We have to get inside the castle."
Pilgrim didn't need any special persuasion, though he was full of questions.
"You're going to fly over the walls?" he asked as he bounded toward him.
Fom was already jogging toward the boat. He boosted Pilgrim aboard, then clambered up. No, he wasn't going to try to fly the damn thing.
"No, just use the loudspeaker to get your boss to find a way in."
Seconds later, pack talk was echoing across the hillside. "Just minutes more. Just minutes more, and I will be facing the countermeasure." And though he had no conscious notion what might come of that, he felt the God-Shatter bubbling up for one final takeover, one final act of Old One's will.
"Where is the Blighter fleet, Rob?"
Her answer came back immediately. She had watched the battle below and the hammer coming down from above.
48 light-years out,"
mumbled conversation off mic. "They've speeded up a little. They'll be in system in 46 hours. I'm sorry, Fom."
Crypto Zero. As received by OOB, Shipboard Ad Hoc. Language Path, Trisk Wayline, SJK Units. Apparently from Shandor Arbitration Intelligence. Not the usual originator, but verified by intermediate sites. Originator may be a branch office or a backup site. Subject: Our final message. Distribution: Threat of the Blight, War Trackers Interest Group, Where Are They Now? Extinctions Log. Date: 72.78 days since the fall of Chandra K. Key phrases: Vast New Attack, The Fall of Shandor Arbitration. Text of message: As best we can tell, all of our high beyond sites have been absorbed by the Blight. If you can, please ignore all messages from those sites. Until 4 hours ago, our organization comprised 20 civilizations at the top. What is left of us doesn't know what to say or what to do. Things are so slow and murky and dull now. We were not meant to live this low. We intend to disband after this transmission. For those who can continue, we want to say what happened. The new attack was an abrupt thing. Our last recollections from above are of the Blight suddenly reaching in all directions, sacrificing all its immediate security to acquire as much processing power as possible. We don't know if we had simply underestimated its power, or if the Blight itself is now desperate and taking desperate risks. Up to 3,000 seconds ago, we were still under heavy assault along our organization's internal networks. That has ceased. Temporarily? Or is this the limit of the attack? We don't know, but if you hear from us again, you will know that the Blight has us. Farewell. Crypto Zero. As received by OOB Shipboard Ad Hoc. Language Path, Optima to Aquilaron to Trisquiline, SJK Units. From Society for Rational Investigation. Probably a single system in the middle beyond, 7,500 light-years, anti-spinward of Chandra K. Subject: The Big Picture. Key phrases: The Blight, Nature's Beauty, Unprecedented Opportunities. Summary: Life Goes On. Distribution, Threat of the Blight, Society for Rational Network Management, War Trackers Interest Group.
Date, 72.80 days since the fall of Chandra K. Text of message. It's always amusing to see people who think themselves the center of the universe. Take the recent spread of the blight. References follow for readers not on those threads and news groups. The blight is an unprecedented change in a limited portion of the top of the beyond, far away from most of my readers. I'm sure it's the ultimate catastrophe for many, and I certainly feel sympathy for such. But a little humor, too, that these people somehow think their disaster is the end of everything. Life goes on, folks. At the same time, it's clear that many readers are not paying proper attention to these events, certainly not seeing what is truly significant about them. In the last year, we have witnessed the apparent murders of several powers and the establishment of a new ecosystem in a portion of the high beyond. Though far away, these events are without precedent. Often before, I have called this the net of a million lies. Well, people, we now have an opportunity to view things while the truth is still manifest. With luck, we may solve some fundamental mysteries about the zones and the powers. I urge readers to watch events below the blight from as many angles as possible. In particular, we should take advantage of the remaining relay at Debley Down to coordinate observations on both sides of the blight-affected region. This will be expensive and tedious, since only middle and low beyond sites are available in the affected region, but it will be well worth it. General topics to follow. The nature of the blight's net communications. The creature is part power and part high beyond, and infinitely interesting. The nature of the recent great surge in the low beyond beneath the blight. This is another event without clear precedent. Now is the time to study it. The nature of the blighter fleet now closing on an off-net site in the low beyond. This fleet has been of great interest to war trackers over the last weeks, but mainly for asinine reasons. Who cares about Chandra K and the Aprahant hegemony? Local politics is for locals. The real question should be obvious to all but the brain damaged. Why has the blight made this great effort so far from its natural zone? If there are any ships still in the vicinity of the blight's fleet, I urge them to keep war trackers posted. Failing that, local civilizations should be reimbursed for forwarding ultrawave traces. This is all very expensive, but worth it, the observation of the Aeon. And the expense will not continue long. The blight's fleet should arrive at the target star momentarily. Will it stop and retrieve, or will we see how a power destroys the systems which oppose it? Either way, we are blessed with opportunity. Chapter 41. Ravna walked across the field toward the waiting packs. The thick smoke had been blown away, but its smell was still heavy in the air. The hillside was burned over desolation. From above, Steele's castle had looked like the center of a great black nipple, hectares of natural and pack-made destruction capping the hill. The soldiers silently made way for her. More than one cast an uneasy glance at the starship grounded behind her. She walked slowly past them toward the ones who waited, eerie the way they sat, like picnickers but all uneasy about each other's presence. This must be the equivalent of a close staff conference for them. Ravna walked toward the pack at the center, the one sitting on silken mats. Intricate wooden filigree hung around the necks of the adults, but some of those looked sick, old. And there were two puppies sitting out front of it. They stepped precisely forward as Ravna crossed the last stretch of open ground.
You're the woodcarver? She asked.
A woman's voice, incredibly human, came from one of the larger members.
Yes, Ravna, I'm woodcarver, but it's Peregrine you want. He's up in the castle, with the children.
Oh, we have a wagon. We can take you inwards right away.
One of them pointed at a vehicle being drawn up the hillside.
But you could have landed much closer, could you not?
Ravna shook her head.
No, not anymore.
This was the best landing that she and Greenstalk could make. The heads cocked at her, all a coordinated gesture.
I thought you were in a terrible hurry. Peregrine says there is a fleet of spacers coming hot on your trail.
For an instant, Ravna didn't say anything, so Fom had told them of the blight. But she was glad he had. She shook her head, trying to clear it of the numbness.
Yes, we are in a great hurry.
The data set on her wrist was linked to the OOB. Its tiny display showed the steady approach of the blight's fleet. All the heads twisted, a gesture that Ravna couldn't interpret.
And you despair? I fear I understand.
How can you? And if you can, how can you forgive us? But all that Ravna said aloud was,
I'm sorry.
The queen mounted her wagon, and they rolled across the hillside toward the castle walls. Ravna looked back once. Downslope, the OOB lay like a great dying moth, its topside drive spines arched 100 meters into the air. They glistened a wet metallic green. Their landing had not quite been a crash. Even now, a graph canceled some of the craft's weight. But the drive spines on the ground side were crumpled. Beyond the ship, the hillside fell steeply away to the water and the islands. The westering sun cast hazy shadows across the islands and on the castle beyond the straits, a fantasy scene of castles and starships. The display on her wrist serenely counted down the seconds.
Steele put gunpowder bombs all around the dome.
Woodcarver swept a couple of noses pointing upwards. Ravna followed her gesture. The arches were more like a prince's cathedral than military architecture, pink marble challenging the sky. And if it all came down, it would surely wreck the spacecraft parked beneath. Woodcarver said that Fom was in there now. They rolled indoors through dark, cool rooms. Ravna glimpsed row after row of cold sleep boxes. How many might still be revivable? Will we ever find out? The shadows were deep.
You're sure that Steele's troops are gone?
Woodcarver hesitated, her head staring in different directions. So far, pack expressions were impossible for Ravna to read.
Reasonably sure. Anybody still in the castle would need to be behind lots of stone, or my search parties would have found them. More important, we have what's left of Steele.
The queen seemed to read Ravna's questioning expression perfectly.
You didn't know? Apparently Lord Steele came down here to blow all the bombs. It would have been suicide, but that pack was always a crazy one. Someone stopped him. There was blood all over. Two of them are dead. We found the rest wandering around, a whimpering mess. Whoever did Steele in is also behind the rapid retreat. That someone is doing his best to avoid any confrontation. He won't be back soon, though I fear I'll have to face dear Flenser eventually.
Under the circumstances, Ravna figured that was one problem that would never materialize. Her data set showed 45 hours till the blight's arrival. Yefri and Johanna were by their starship under the main dome. They sat on the steps of the landing ramp holding hands. When the wide doors opened and Woodcarver's wagon drove through, the girl stood and waved. Then they saw Ravna. The boy walked first quickly, then more slowly across the wide floor.
Yefri Olshendot?
Ravna called softly. He had a tentative, dignified posture that seemed much too old for a 9-year-old. Poor Yefri had lost much and lived with so little for so long. She stepped down from the wagon and walked toward him. The boy advanced out of the shadows. He was surrounded by a near mob of small-sized pack members. One of them hung on his shoulder. Others tumbled around his feet without ever seeming to get in his way. Still others followed his path both in front and behind. Yefri stopped well back from her.
Ravna?
She nodded.
Could you step a little closer? The queen's mind sound is too close.
The voice was still the boy's, but his lips hadn't moved. She walked the few meters that still separated them. Puppies and boy advanced hesitantly. Up close, she could see the rips in his clothing and what looked like wound dressings on his shoulders and elbows and knees. His face looked recently washed, but his hair was a sticky mess. He looked up at her solemnly, then raised his arms to hug her. "Thank you for coming." His voice was muffled against her, but he wasn't crying.
"Yes, thank you. Thank poor Mr. Blueshell."
His voice again, sad but unmuffled, coming from the pack of puppies all around them. Johanna Olschendott had advanced to stand just behind them. "Only 14 she is?" Ravna reached a hand toward her.
"From what I hear, you were a rescue force all by yourself."
Woodcarver's voice came from the wagon.
"Johanna was that. She changed our world."
Ravna gestured up the ship's ramp at the glow of the interior lighting.
"Fawn's up there?"
The girl started to nod, was preempted by the pack of puppies.
"Yes, he is. He and the pilgrim are up there."
The pups disentangled themselves and started up the steps, one remaining behind to tug Ravna toward the ramp. She started after them, with Yefri close beside her.
"Who is this pack?"
she said abruptly to Yefri, pointing to the puppies. The boy stopped in surprise.
"Amdi, of course."
"I'm sorry."
Yefri's voice came from the puppies.
"I've talked to you so much, I forget you don't know."
There was a chorus of tones and chords that ended in a human giggle. She looked down at the bobbing heads and was certain the little devil was quite aware of his misrepresentations. Suddenly a mystery was solved.
"Pleased to meet you," she said, angered and charmed at the same time. "Now?"
"Right. There are much more important things now."
The pack continued to hop upstairs. Amdi seemed to alternate between shy sadness and manic activity.
"I don't know what they're up to. They kicked us out as soon as we showed them around."
Ravna followed the pack, Yefri close behind. It didn't sound like anything was going on. The interior of the dome was like a tomb, echoing with the talk of the few packs who guarded it. But here, halfway up the steps, even those sounds were muted, and there was nothing coming through the hatch at the top.
"Fom? He's up there."
It was Johanna, at the base of the stairs. She and Woodcarver were looking up at them. She hesitated.
"I'm not sure if he's okay. After the battle, he seemed strange."
Woodcarver's head weaved about, as if she were trying to get a good look at them through the glare of the hatch lights.
"The acoustics in this ship of yours are awful. How can humans stand it?"
Amdi.
"Ah, it's not so bad. Yefri and I spent lots of time up here. I got used to it."
Two of his heads were pushing at the hatch.
"I don't know why Fom and Pilgrim kicked us out. We could have stayed in the other room and been real quiet."
Ravna stepped carefully between the pack's lead puppies and pounded on the hull metal. It wasn't hard-latched. Now she could hear the ship's ventilation.
"Fom, what progress?"
There was a rustling sound and the click of claws. The hatch slid partway back. Bright, flickering lights spilled down the ramp. A single doggy head appeared. Ravna could see white all around its eyes. Did that mean anything?
"Hi," it said. Look, things are a bit tense just now. Fom, I don't think Fom should be bothered."
Ravna slipped her hand past the gap.
"I'm not here to bother him, but I am coming in."
How long we fought for this moment. How many billions have died along the way, and now some talking dog tells me things are a bit tense. The pilgrim looked down at her hand.
"Okay."
He slid the hatch far enough open to let her through. The pups were quick around her heels, but they recoiled before the pilgrim's glance. Ravna didn't notice. The ship was scarcely more than a freight container, a cargo hull. The cargo this time, the cold sleep boxes, had been removed, leaving a mostly level floor dotted with hundreds of fittings. All this she scarcely noticed. It was the light, the thing, that held her eyes. It grew out from the walls and gathered almost too bright to bear at the center of the hold. its shape changed and changed again, its colors shifting from red to violet to green. Fom sat cross-legged by the apparition within it. Half his hair was burned away. His hands and arms were shivering, and he mumbled in some language he didn't recognize. God shatter. 2 times it had been the companion to disaster. A dying power's madness. And now it was the only hope. Old Fom. Ravna took a step toward him, felt jaws close on her sleeve. Please, he mustn't be disturbed. The one that was holding her arm was a big dog, battle-scarred. The rest of the pack, Pilgrim, all faced inwards on Fom. The savage stared at her, somehow saw the anger rising in her face. Then the pack said,
"Look, ma'am, your Fom's in some sort of fugue state. All the normal personality traded for computation." "Huh?"
This Pilgrim had the jargon, but probably not much else. Fom must have been talking to him. She made a shushing gesture.
"Yes, yes. I understand."
She stared into the light. The changing shape, so hard to look at, was something like the graphics you can generate on most displays, the silly cross-sections of high-dimensional froths. It glowed in purest monochrome, but shifted through the colors. Much of the light must be coherent. Interference speckles crawled on every solid surface. In places, the interference banded up, stripes of dark and light that slid across the hull as the color changed. She walked slowly closer, staring at Fom and the countermeasure. For what else could it be? The scum in the walls now grown out to meet God shatter. This was not simply data, a message to be relayed. This was a transcendent machine. Ravna had read of such things, devices made in the transcend for use at the bottom of the beyond. There would be nothing sentient about it, nothing that violated the constraints of the lower zones, yet it would make the best possible use of nature here to do whatever its builder had desired. Its builder? The Blight? An enemy of the Blight? She stepped closer. The thing was deep in Fom's chest, but there was no blood, no torn flesh. She might have thought it all trick holography, except that she could see him shudder at its writhing. The fractal arms were feathered by long teeth twisting at him. She gasped, almost called his name, but Fom wasn't resisting. He seemed deeper into God's shatter than ever before, and more at peace. The hope and fear came suddenly out of hiding, hope that maybe, even now, Godshatter could do something about the Blight, and fear that Fom would die in the process. The artifact's twisting evolution slowed. The light hung at the pale edge of blue. Fom's eyes opened. His head turned toward her.
"The Rider's myth is real, Ravna."
His voice was distant. She heard the whisper of a laugh.
"The Rider should know, I guess. They learned the last time. There are things that don't like the Blight, things my old one only guessed at."
"Powers beyond the powers?" Ravna sank to the floor. The display on her wrist glowed up at her. Less than 45 hours left. Fom saw her downward glance.
"I know. Nothing has slowed the fleet. It's a pitiful thing so far down here, but more than powerful enough to destroy this world, this solar system. And that's what the Blight wants now. The Blight knows I can destroy it, just as it was destroyed before."
Ravna was vaguely aware that Pilgrim had crawled in close on all sides. Every face was fixed on the blue froth and the human enmeshed within.
"How, Fom?" Ravna whispered.
Silence.
Then, "All the zone turbulence. That was countermeasure trying to act, but without coordination. Now I'm guiding it. I've begun the reverse surge. It's drawing on local energy sources. Can't you feel it?"
Reverse surge? What was Fom talking about?
She glanced again at her wrist and gasped. Enemy speed had jumped to 20 light-years per hour, as fast as might be expected in the middle beyond. What had been almost 2 days of grace was barely 2 hours. Now the display said 25 light-years per hour, 30. Someone was pounding on the hatch. Scrupolo was delinquent. He should be supervising the move up the hillside. He knew that and really felt quite guilty, but he persevered in his dereliction. Like an addict chewing crima leaves, some things are too delicious to give up. Scrupolo dawdled behind, carrying Dataset carefully between him so that its floppy pink ears would not drag on the ground. In fact, guarding Dataset was certainly more important than hassling his troopers. In any case, he was more or less close enough to give advice, and his lieutenants were more clever than he at everyday work. During the last few hours, the coastal winds had taken the smoke clouds inland, and the air was clean and salty. On this part of the hill, not everything was burned. There were even some flowers and fluffy seed pods. Bob-tailed birds sailed up the rising air from the sea valley, their cries a happy music, as if promising that the world would soon be as before. Scrupolo knew it could not be. He turned all his heads to look down the hillside at Ravna Bergschendott's starship. He estimated the surviving drive spines as 100 meters long. The hull itself was more than 120. He hunkered down around Dataset and popped open its cushioned Oliphant face. Dataset knew lots about spacecraft. Actually, this ship was not a human design, but the overall shape was fairly ordinary. He knew that from his previous readings. 20 to 30,000 tons, equipped with anti-gravity floats and faster-than-light drive, all very ordinary for the beyond. But to see it here, through the eyes of his very own members, Scrupolo couldn't keep his gaze from the thing. Three of him worked with Dataset while the other two stared at the iridescent green hull. The troopers and gun carts around him faded to insignificance. For all its mass, the ship seemed to rest gently on the hillside. How long will it be before we can build such? Centuries without outside help, the histories in Dataset claimed. What I wouldn't give for a day around aboard her. Yet this ship was being chased by something mightier. Scrupolo shivered in the summer sun. He had often enough heard Pilgrim's story of the first landing, and he had seen the human's beam weapon. He had read much in Dataset about planet wrecker bombs and the other weapons of the beyond. While he worked on Woodcarver's cannon, the best weapons he could bring to be, he had dreamed and wondered. Until he saw the starship floating above, he had never quite felt the reality in his innermost hearts. Now he did. So a fleet of killers chased close behind Ravna Bergschendott. The hours of the world might be few indeed. He tabbed quickly through Dataset's search paths, looking for articles about space piloting. If there be only hours, at least learn what there is time to learn. So Scrupolo was lost in the sound and vision of Dataset. He had three windows open, each on a different aspect of the piloting experience. Loud shots from the hillside. He looked up with one head, more irritated than anything else. It wasn't a battle alarm they were calling, just a general unease. Strange, the afternoon air seemed pleasantly cool. Two of him looked high, but there was no haze. Scrupolo! Look! Look! His gunners were dancing in panic. They were pointing at the sky, at the sun. He folded the pink covers over Dataset's face, at the same time looking sunward with shaded view. The sun was still high in the south, dazzling bright, yet the air was cool and the birds were making the cooing sounds of low sun nesting. And suddenly he realized that he was looking straight at the sun's disk, had been for 5 seconds, without pain or even watering of his eyes. And there was still no haze that he could see. An inner chill spread across his mind.
The sunlight was fading. He could see black dots on the surface. Sunspots. He had seen them often enough with Scriber's telescopes, but that had been through heavy filters. Something stood between him and the sun, something that sucked away its light and warmth. The packs on the hillside moaned. It was a frightened sound Scrupolo had never heard in battle, the sound of someone confronted by unknowable terror. Blue faded from the sky. The air was suddenly cold as deep, dark night, and the sun's color was a gray luminescence like a faded moon. Less. Scrupolo hunkered bellies to ground. Some of him was whistling deep in the throat. Weapons. Weapons. But Dataset never spoke of this. The stars were the brightest light on the hillside.
Fom, Fom, they'll be here in an hour. What have you done?
A miracle, Butterville. Fom Nguyen swayed in countermeasure's bright embrace. His voice was almost normal, the god shatter receding. What have I done? Not much. And more than any power. Even Old One only guessed, Ravna. The thing the Straumers brought here is the Rider myth. Just moved the zone boundary back. A local change, but intense. We're in the equivalent of the high beyond now, maybe even the low transcend. That's why the Blighter fleet can move so fast.
But...
Pilgrim was back from the hatch. He interrupted Ravna's incoherent panic with a matter of fact. The sun just went out.
His head's bobbed in an expression she couldn't fathom. Fom answered, That's temporary. Something has to power this maneuver.
Well, why, Fom?
Even if the Black was sure to win, why help it? The man's face went blank. Fom Nguyen almost disappearing behind the other programs at work in his mind. Then, I'm focusing countermeasure.
I see now, countermeasure, what it is.
It was designed by something beyond the powers. Maybe there are cloud people, maybe this is signaling them. Or maybe what it's just done is like an insect bite, something that will cause a much greater reaction. The bottom of the beyond has just receded, like the waterline before a tsunami. The countermeasure glared red-orange, its arcs and barbs embracing Fom more tightly than before. And now that we have bootstrapped to a decent zone, things can really happen. Oh, the ghost of Old One is amused. Seeing beyond the powers was almost worth dying for. The fleet stats flowed across Ravna's wrist. The blight was coming on even faster than before.
5 minutes, Fom.
Even though they were still 30 light-years out. Laughter.
Oh, the blight knows, too. I see this is what it feared all along. This is what killed it those eons ago. It's racing forward now, but it's too late.
The glow brightened. The mask of light that was Fom's face seemed to relax.
Something very far away has hurt me, Rav. It's coming.
What? What's coming?
The surge. So big. It makes what hit us before seem a gentle wave. This is the one nobody believes because no one's left to record it. The bottom will be blown out beyond the fleet.
Sudden understanding. Sudden wild hope.
And they'll be trapped out there, won't they?
So Kiet Svensendot had not fought in vain, and Fom's advice had not been nonsense. Now there wasn't a single ram scoop in the Blighter fleet.
Yes. They're 30 light-years out. We killed all the speed-capable ones. They'll be 1,000 years getting here.
The artifact abruptly contracted, and Fom moaned.
Not much time. We're at maximum recession. When the surge comes, it will...
Again, a sound of pain.
I can see it. By the powers, Ravna, it will sweep high and last long.
How high, Fom?
Ravna said softly.
She thought of all the civilizations above them. There were the butterflies and the treacherous types who had supported the pogrom at Chandra Kay. And there were trillions who lived in peace and made their own way toward the heights.
1,000 light years? 10,000? I'm not sure. The ghosts in countermeasure, Arna and Shauna, thought it might rise so high it would punch into the transcend, insist the blight right where it sits. That must be what happened before.
Arna and Shauna? The countermeasure's writhing had slowed. Its light flickered bright and then out. Bright and then out. She heard Fahm's breath gasp with every darkness. Countermeasure. A savior that was going to kill a million civilizations, and was killing the man who had triggered it. Almost unthinking, she dodged past the thing, reaching for Fahm, but razors on razors blocked her, raking her arms. Fahm was looking up at her. He was trying to say something more. Then the light went out for a final time. From the darkness all around came a hissing sound and a growing bitter smell that Ravna would never forget. For Fahm Nguyen, there was no pain. The last minutes of his life were beyond any description that might be rendered in the slowness or even in the beyond. So try metaphor and simile. It was like... Fahm stood with Old One on a vast and empty beach. Ravna and Tynes were tiny creatures at their feet. Planets and stars were the grains of sand. And the sea had drawn briefly back, letting the brightness of thought reach here where before had been darkness. The transcendence would be brief. At the horizon, the drawn-back sea was building, a dark wall higher than any mountain, rushing back upon them. He looked up at the enormity of it. Fahm and God-Shatter and Countermeasure would not survive that submergence, not even separately. They had triggered catastrophe beyond mind. A vast section of the galaxy plunged into slowness, as deep as old Earth itself and as permanent. Arna and Shauna and Straumers and Old One were avenged, and Countermeasure was complete. And as for Fahm Nguyen, a tool made and used, and now to be discarded. A man who never was. The surge was upon him then, plunging depths, down from the transcendent light. Outside the Tynes world sun would be shining bright once more, but inside Fahm's mind everything was closing down, senses returning to what eyes can see and ears can hear. He felt countermeasure slough toward non-existence, its task done without ever a conscious thought. Old One's ghost hung on for a little longer, huddling and retreating as thought's potential ebbed. But it let Fahm's awareness be. For once, it did not push him aside. For once it was gentle, brushing at the surface of Fahm's mind, as a human might pet a loyal dog. More a brave wolf you are, Fahm Nguyen. There were only seconds left before they were fully in the depths, where the merged bodies of Countermeasure and Fahm Nguyen would die forever and all thought cease. Memories shifted. The ghost of Old One stepped aside, revealing certainties it had hidden all along. Yes, I built you from several bodies in the junkyard by relay. But there was only one mind and one set of memories that I could revive. A strong, brave wolf. So strong I could never control you without first casting you into doubt. Somewhere barriers slipped aside, the final failing of Old One's control or a final gift. It did not matter which now, for whatever the ghost said, the truth was obvious to Fahm Nguyen, and he would not be denied. Canberra, Sendi, the centuries of voyaging with Cheng Ho, the final flight of the wild goose. It was all real. He looked up at Ravna. She had done so much. She had put up with so much.
and even disbelieving, she had loved. It's okay. It's okay. He tried to reach out to her, to tell her, "Oh, Ravna, I am real." Then the full weight of the depths was upon him, and he knew no more. There was more pounding on the door. She heard Pilgrim walk to the hatch. A crack of light shone in. Ravna heard Yepri's piping voice.
"The sun is back! The sun is back!" "Hi! Why is it so dark in here?"
Pilgrim.
"The artifact. The thing Fom was helping. Its light went out."
"Geez! You mean you left off the main lights?"
The hatch slid all the way open, and the boy's head, along with several puppies, was silhouetted against the torchlight beyond. He scrambled over the lip of the hatch. The girl was right behind him.
"The control is right over here, see?"
And soft white light shone on the curving walls. All was ordinary and human, except... Yefri stood very still, his eyes wide, his hand over his mouth. He turned to hold on to his sister.
"What is it? What is it?"
his voice said from the opened hatch. Now Ravna wished she could not see. She dropped back to her knees.
"Fom?"
she said softly, knowing there would be no answer. What was left of Fom Nuin lay amid the countermeasure. The artifact didn't glow anymore. Its tortuous boundaries were blunted and dark. More than anything, it looked like rotted wood, but wood that embraced and impaled the man who lay with it. There was no blood and no charring. Where the artifact had pierced Fom, there was an ashy stain, and the flesh and the things seemed to merge. Pilgrim was close around her, his noses almost touching the still form. The bitter smell still hung in the air. It was the smell of death, but not the simple rotting of flesh. What had died here was flesh and something else. She glanced at her wrist. The display had simplified to a few alphanumeric lines. No ultra drives could be detected. OOB status showed problems with attitude control. They were deep in the slow zone, out of reach of all help, out of reach of the Blight's fleet. She looked into Fom's face.
"You did it, Fom. You really did it."
She said the word softly to herself. The arches and loops of countermeasure were a fragile, brittle thing now. The body of Fom Nuin was part of that. How could they break those arches without breaking? Pilgrim and Johanna gently urged Ravna out of the cargo hold. She didn't remember much of the next few minutes of them bringing out the body. Blueshell and Fom, both gone beyond all retrieval. They left her after a while. There was no lack of compassion, but disaster and strangeness and emergency were in too abundant a supply. There were the wounded. There was the possibility of counterattack. There was great confusion and a desperate need for order. It made scarcely any impression on her. She was at the end of her long, desperate run, at the end of all her energy. Ravna must have sat by the ramp for much of the afternoon, so deep in loss as not to think, scarcely aware of the sea-song that Greenstalk shared with her through the dataset. Eventually, she realized that she was not alone. Besides Greenstalk's comfort, sometime earlier, the little boy had returned. He sat beside her, and around them all the puppies, all silent. Epilogues. Peace had come to what had once been Flenser's domain. At least there was no sign of belligerent forces. Whoever had pulled them back had done it very cleverly. As the days passed, local peasantry showed themselves. Where the people weren't simply dazed, they seemed glad to be rid of the old regime. Life picked up in the farmlands, peasants doing their best to recover from the worst fire season of recent memory, compounded by the most fighting the region had ever known. The Queen had sent messengers south to report on the victory, but she seemed in no rush to return to her city. Her troops helped with some of the farm work and did their best not to be a burden on the locals. But they also scouted through the castle on Starship Hill and the huge old castle on Hidden Island. Down there were all the horrors that had been whispered about over the years, but still there was no sign of the forces that had escaped. The locals were eager with their own stories, and most were ominously credible. That before Flenser had undertaken his attempt upon the Republic, he had created redoubts further north. There had been reserves there, though some thought that Steele had long since used them. Peasants from the northern valley had seen the Flenserist troops retreating. Some said they had seen Flenser himself, or at least a pack wearing the colors of a lord. Even the locals did not believe all the stories, the ones about Flenser being here and there, singletons separated by kilometers, coordinating the pullout. Ravna and the Queen had reason to believe the story, but not the foolhardiness to check it out. Woodcarver's expeditionary force was not a large one, and the forests and valleys stretched on for more than 100 kilometers to where the ice fangs curved west to meet the sea. That territory was unknown to Woodcarver. If Flenser had been preparing it for decades, as was that pack's normal method of operation, there would be deadly surprises even for a large army hunting just a few dozens of partisans. Let Flenser be, and hope that his redoubts had been gutted by Lord Steele. Woodcarver worried that this would be the great peril of the next century. But things were resolved much sooner than that. It was Flenser who sought them out, and not with a counterattack. About 20 days after the battle, at the end of a day when the sun dipped just behind the northern hills, there was the sound of signal horns. Ravna and Johanna were wakened and shortly found themselves on the castle's parapet, peering into something like a sunset, all orange and gold silhouetting the hills beyond the northern fjord. Woodcarver's aides were gazing from many eyes at the ridgeline. A few had telescopes. Ravna shared her binocs with Johanna.
"Someone's up there."
Stark against the sky glow, a pack carried a long banner with separate poles for each member. Woodcarver was using 2 telescopes, probably more effective than Ravna's gear, considering the pack's eye separation.
"Yes, I see it. That's a truce flag, by the way, and I think I know who's carrying it."
She yammered something at Peregrine.
"It's been a long time since I've talked to that one."
Johanna was still looking through the binoculars. Finally, she said,
"He made Steele, didn't he?"
"Yes, dear."
The girl lowered the binocs.
"I think I'll pass up meeting him."
Her voice was distant. They met on the hillside north of the castle just 8 hours later. Woodcarver's troops had spent the intervening time scouting the valley. It was only partly a matter of protecting against treachery from the other side. One very special pack of the enemy would be coming, and there were plenty of locals who would like that one dead. Woodcarver walked to where the hill fell off precipitously toward forest. Ravna and Pilgrim followed behind her at a tinishly close 10 meters. Woodcarver wasn't saying much about this meeting, but Pilgrim had turned out to be a very talkative sort.
"This is just the way I came originally, a year ago, when the first ship landed. You can see how some of the trees were burned by the torch. Good thing it wasn't as dry that summer as this."
The forest was dense, but they were looking down over the treetops. Even in the dryness, there was a sweet, resinous smell in the air. To their left was a tiny waterfall and a path that led to the valley floor, the path their truce visitor had agreed to take. Farmland, Peregrine called the valley bottom. It was undisciplined chaos to Ravna's eyes. The Tynes grew different crops together in the same fields, and she saw no fences, not even to hold back livestock. Here and there were wooden lodges with steep roofs and outward curving walls,
what you might expect in a region with snowy winters.
"Quite a mob down there," said Pilgrim.
It didn't look crowded to her. Little clumps, each a pack, each well separated from the others. They clustered around the lodge buildings. More were scattered across the fields. Woodcarver packs were stationed along the little road that crossed the valley. She felt Pilgrim tense next to her. A head extended past her waist, pointing.
"That must be him, all alone as promised, and..."
Part of him was looking through a telescope.
"Now that's a surprise."
A single pack trekked slowly down the road past Woodcarver's guards. It was pulling a small cart, containing one of its own members, apparently. A cripple? The peasants in the fields drifted toward the edge of the field, paralleling the lone pack's course. She heard the gobble of Tynish talk. When they wanted to be loud, they could be very, very loud. The troopers moved to chase back any local who got too close to the road.
"I thought they were grateful to us."
This was the closest thing to violence she had seen since the Battle of Starship Hill.
"They are. Most of those are shouting death to Flenser."
Flenser, Skinner, the pack who had rescued Jeffrey Olshendut.
"They can hate one pack so much?"
"Love and hate and fear all together. More than a century they've been under his knife, and now he is here, half crippled and without his troops. Yet they are still afraid. There are enough cotters down there to overwhelm our guard, but they're not pushing hard. This was Flenser's domain, and he treated it like a good farmer might treat his yard. Worse, he treated the people and the land like some grand experiment. From reading data set, I see he is a monster ahead of his time. There are some out there who might still kill for the master, and no one is sure who they are."
He paused a second, just watching.
"And you know the greatest reason for fear? That he would come here alone, so far from any help we can conceive."
"So..." Ravna shifted Fom's pistol forward on her belt. It was a bulky, blatant thing, and she was glad to have it. She glanced westward towards Hidden Island. OOB was safely grounded against the battlements on the castle there. Unless Greenstalk could do some basic reprogramming, it would not fly again. And Greenstalk was not optimistic. But she and Ravna had mounted the beam gun in one of its cargo bays, and that remote was dead simple. Flenser might have his surprises, but so did Ravna. The fivesome disappeared beneath the steepness.
"It will be a while yet," said Pilgrim.
One of his pups stood on his shoulders and leaned against Ravna's arm. She grinned. Her private information feed. She picked it up and placed it on her shoulder. The rest of Peregrine sat his rumps on the ground and watched expectantly. Ravna looked at the others of the Queen's party. Woodcarver had posted crossbow packs to her right and left. Flenser would sit directly before her and a little downslope. Ravna thought she could see nervousness in Woodcarver. The members kept licking their lips, the narrow pink tongues slipping in and out with snake-like quickness. The Queen had arranged herself as if for a group portrait, the taller members behind and the two little ones sitting erect in front. Most of her gaze seemed focused on the break in the verge where the path from below reached the terrace they sat upon. Finally, Ravna heard the scritching of claws on stone. One head appeared over the drop-off, and then more. Flenser walked out onto the moss, two of his members pulling the wheeled cart. The one in the cart sat erect, its hindquarters covered by a blanket. Except for its white-tipped ears, it seemed unremarkable. The pack's heads peered in every direction. One stayed disconcertingly focused on Ravna as the pack proceeded up the slope toward the Queen. Skinner Flenser was the one who had worn the radio cloaks. None were worn now. Through gaps in its jackets, Ravna could see scabby splotches where the fur had been rubbed away.
"Mangy fellow, isn't he?" came the little voice in Ravna's ear. "But cool, too. Catch his insolent look."
The Queen hadn't moved. She seemed frozen, every member staring at the oncoming pack. Some of her noses were trembling.
Four of Flenser tipped the cart forward, helping the white-tipped one slide to the ground. Now Ravna could see that under the blanket, its hindquarters were unnaturally twisted and still. The five settled themselves, rumps together, their necks arched up and out, almost like the limbs of a single creature. The pack gobbled something that sounded to Ravna like strangling songbirds. Pilgrim's translation came immediately from the puppy on Ravna's shoulder. The pup spoke in a new voice, a traditional villain voice from children's stories, a dry and sardonic voice.
"Greetings, parent. It has been many years."
Woodcarver said nothing for a moment. Then she gobbled something back, and Pilgrim translated.
"You recognize me?"
One of Flenser's heads jabbed out toward Woodcarver.
"Not the members, of course, but your soul is obvious."
Again silence from the Queen. Peregrine annotating.
"My poor Woodcarver. I never thought she would be this flummoxed."
Abruptly he spoke loud, addressing Flenser and Somnorsh.
"Well, you are not so obvious to me, O former traveling companion. I remember you as Tyrethet, the timid teacher from the Long Lakes."
Several of the heads turned toward Peregrine and Ravna. The creature replied in pretty good Somnorsh, but with a childish voice.
"Greetings, Peregrine. And greetings, Ravna Bergshendot?" "Yes, Flenser Tyrethet, I am."
The heads angled downwards, eyes blinking slowly.
"Sly bugger,"
Peregrine muttered.
"Is Amdi Yefri safe?"
the Flenser suddenly asked.
"What?"
said Ravna, not recognizing the name at first. Then,
"Yes, they are fine."
"Good." Now all the heads turned back to the Queen, and the creature continued in pack talk.
"Like a dutiful creation, I have come to make peace with my parent, dear Woodcarver."
"Does he really talk like that?"
Ravna hissed at the puppy on her shoulder.
"Hi, would I exaggerate?"
Woodcarver gobbled back, and Pilgrim picked up the translation, now in the Queen's human voice.
"Peace? I doubt it, Flenser. More likely you want breathing space to build again, to try to kill us all again."
"I wish to build again, that is true, but I have changed. The timid teacher has made me a little softer. Something you could never do, parent."
"What?"
Pilgrim managed to inject a tone of injured surprise into the word.
"Woodcarver, have you never thought on it? You are the most brilliant pack to live in this part of the world, perhaps the most brilliant of all time, and the packs you made, they are mostly brilliant too. But have you not wondered on the most successful of them? You created too brilliantly. You ignored inbreeding and things that I can't translate easily. And you got me, with all the quirks that have so pained you over the last century."
I have thought on that mistake, and done better since."
"Yes, as with Vendacious?" "Oh, look at my queen's faces. He really hurt her there." "Never mind, never mind. Vendacious may well have been a different sort of error. The point is, you made me. Before, I thought that your greatest act of genius. Now, I'm not so sure. I want to make amends, to live in peace."
One of the heads jabbed at Ravna, another at the OOB down by Hidden Island. "And there are other things in the universe to point our genius at."
"I hear the arrogance of old. Why should I trust you now?"
"I helped to save the children. I saved the ship."
"And you were always the world's greatest opportunist."
Flenser's flanking head shifted back.
"That's a kind of dismissing shrug. You have the advantage, parent, but some of my power is left in the north. Make peace, or you will have more decades of maneuvering and war."
Woodcarver's response was a piercing shriek.
"And that's a sign of irritation, in case you didn't guess. Impudence! I can kill you here and now and have a century of certain peace.
I bet that you won't harm me. You gave me safe passage, separately and in the whole. And one of the strongest things in your soul is your hate for lies.
The back members of Woodcarver's pack hunkered down, and the little ones at the front took several quick steps toward the Flenser.
It's been many decades since we last met, Flenser. If you can change, might not I?
For an instant, every one of Flenser's members was frozen. Then part of him came slowly to its feet, and slowly, slowly edged toward Woodcarver. The crossbow packs on either side of the meeting ground raised their weapons, tracking him. Flenser stopped 6 or 7 meters from Woodcarver. His heads weaved from side to side, all attention on the Queen. Finally, a wondering voice, almost abashed.
Yes, you might.
Woodcarver, after all the centuries, you've given up yourself? These new ones are not all mine, quite right.
For some reason, Pilgrim was chuckling in Ravna's ear.
Oh, well, the Flenser backed to its previous position. I still want peace.
Woodcarver looks surprised.
You sound changed, too. How many of you are really a Flenser?
A long pause.
Two.
Very well. Depending on the terms, there will be peace.
Maps were brought out. Woodcarver demanded the location of Flenser's main troops. She wanted them disarmed, with 2 or 3 of her packs assigned to each unit, reporting by heliograph. Flenser would give up the radio cloaks and submit to observation. Hidden Island and Starship Hill would be ceded to Woodcarver. The two sketched new borders and wrangled on the oversight the Queen would have in his remaining lands. The sun reached its noon point in the southern sky. In the fields below, the peasants had long since given up their angry vigil. The only tensely watchful people left were the Queen's crossbow packs. Finally, Flenser stepped back from his end of the maps.
Yes, yes, your folk can watch all my work. No more ghastly experiments. I will be a gentle gatherer of knowledge. Is this sarcasm? Like yourself.
Woodcarver's heads bobbed in rippling synchrony.
Perhaps so. With the two legs on my side, I'm willing to chance it.
Flenser rose again from his seated posture. He turned to help his crippled member back on the cart. Then he paused.
Ah, one last thing, dear Woodcarver. A detail. I killed 2 of Steel when he tried to destroy Yefri's starship. Squashed them like bugs, actually. Now we know how Flenser hurt himself. Do you have the rest of him?
Yes.
Ravna had seen what was left of Steel. She and Johanna had visited most of the wounded. It should be possible to adapt OOB first aid for the times. But in the case of Steel, there had been a bit of vengeful curiosity. That creature had been responsible for so much unnecessary death. What was left of Steel didn't really need medical attention. There were some bloody scratches, self-inflicted, Johanna guessed, and 1 twisted leg. But the pack was a pitiable, almost unnerving thing. It had cowered at the back of its pen, all shivering in terror, heads shifting this way and that. Every so often, the creature's jaws would snap open and shut, or one member would make an aborted run at the fence. A pack of 3 was not of human intelligence, but this one could talk. When it saw Ravna and Johanna, its eyes went wide, the white showing all around, and it rattled barely intelligible somnosh at them. The speech was a nightmare mix of threats and pleas that they... Not cut! Not cut! Poor Johanna started crying then. She had spent most of the year hating the pack these were from, yet...
They seem to be victims, too. It's bad to be 3, but no one will ever let them be more.
Well, continued Flenser, I would like custody of what remains. I... Never. That one was almost as smart as you, even if crazy enough to defeat. You're not going to build him back.
Flenser came together, all eyes staring at the Queen. His voice was soft.
Please, Woodcarver, this is a small matter, but I will throw over everything.
He jabbed at the maps, rather than be denied in it.
Uh-oh.
The crossbow packs were suddenly at the ready. Woodcarver came partly around the maps, close enough to Flenser that their mind noise must collide. She brought all her heads together in a concerted glare.
If it is so unimportant, why risk everything for it?
Flenser bumped around for an instant, his members actually staring at one another. It was a gesture Ravna had not seen till now.
That is my affair. I mean, Steele was my greatest creation. In a way, I am proud of him. But I am also responsible for him. Don't you feel the same about Vendacious? I've got my plans for Vendacious.
The response was grudging.
In fact, Vendacious is still whole. I fear the Queen made too many promises to do much with him now. I want to make up to Steele the harm I made him. You understand? I understand. I've seen Steele, and I understand your methods, the knives, the fear, the pain. You're not going to get another chance at it.
It sounded to Ravna like faint music, something from far beyond the valley, an alien blending of chords. But it was Flenser answering back. Pilgrim's translating voice held no hint of sarcasm.
No knives, no cutting. I keep my name because it is for others to rename me when they finally accept that. In her way, Tyrethect won. Give me this chance, Woodcarver. I am begging.
The two packs stared at each other for more than 10 seconds. Ravna looked from one to the other, trying to divine their expressions. No one said anything. There was not even Pilgrim's voice in her ear to speculate on whether this was a lie or the bearing of a new soul. It was Woodcarver who decided.
Very well. You may have him.
Peregrine Wick Raxgar was flying, a pilgrim with legends that went back almost 1,000 years, and not one of them could come near to this. He would have burst into song, except that it would pain his passengers. They were already unhappy enough with his rough piloting, even though they thought it was simply his inexperience. Peregrine stepped across clouds, flew among and through them, danced with an occasional thunderstorm. How many hours of his life had he stared up at the clouds, gauging their depths? And now he was in them, exploring the caves within caves, the cathedrals of light. Between scattered clouds, the great western ocean stretched forever. By the sun and the flyer's instruments, he knew that they had nearly reached the equator, and were already some 8,000 kilometers southwest of Woodcarver's domain. There were islands out here, the OOB's pictures from space said so, and so did the pilgrim's own memories. But it had been long since he ventured here, and he had not expected to see the island kingdoms in the lifetime of his current members. Now suddenly he was going back, flying back. The OOB's landing boat was a wonderful thing, and not nearly as strange as it had seemed in the midst of battle. True, they had not yet figured out how to program it for automatic flight. Perhaps they never would. In the meantime, this little flyer worked with electronics that were barely more than glorified moving parts. The Agrav itself required constant adjustment, and the controls were scattered across the bow periphery, conveniently placed for the fronds of a scroter rider, or the members of a pack. With the spacer's help and OOB's documentation, it had taken Pilgrim only a few days to get the hang of flying the thing. It was all a matter of spreading one's mind across all the various tasks. The learning had been happy hours, a little bit scary, floating nearly out of control, once in a screwball configuration that accelerated endlessly upward. But in the end, the machine was like an extension of his jaws and paws. Since they descended from the purpling heights and began playing in the cloud tops, Ravna had been looking more and more uncomfortable. After a particularly stomach-lurching bump and drop, she said, "Will you be able to land okay? Maybe we should have postponed this till..." "You can fly better."
Oh, yes. We'll be past this, weather front real soon."
He dived beneath the clouds and swerved a few tens of kilometers eastwards. The weather was clear here, and it was actually more on a line with their destination. Secretly chastened, he resolved to do no more joyriding, on the inbound leg anyway. His second passenger spoke up then, only the second time in the two-hour flight.
"I liked it," said Greenstalk.
Her voter voice charmed Pilgrim, mostly narrow-band, but with little frets high up from the square waves.
It was like riding just beneath the surf, feeling your fronds moving with the sea."
Peregrine had tried hard to know the Skrota rider. The creature was the only non-human alien in the world, and harder to know than the two legs. She seemed to dream most of the time, and forgot all but things that happened again and again to her. It was her primitive Skrota that accounted for part of that, Ravna told him. Remembering the run that Greenstalk's mate had made through the flames, Pilgrim believed. Out among the stars, there were things even stranger than two legs. It made Pilgrim's imagination ache. On the horizon, he saw a dark ring and another beyond.
"We'll have you in real surf very soon."
Ravna.
"These are the islands?"
Peregrine looked over the map displays as he took a shot on the sun.
"Yes, indeed,
though it didn't really matter." The Western Ocean was over 12,000 kilometers across, and all through the tropics it was dotted with atolls and island chains. This group was just a bit more isolated than others. The nearest islander settlement was almost 2,000 kilometers away. They were over the nearest island. Pilgrim took a swing around it, admiring the tropic ferns that clung to the coral. At this tide, their bony roots were exposed. Not any flat land here at all. He flew on to the next, a larger one with a pretty glade just within the ring wall. He floated the boat down in a smooth glide that touched the ground without even the tiniest bump. Ravna Bergschendop looked at him with something like suspicion.
"Oh-oh. Hi. I'm getting better, don't you think?"
he said weakly. An uninhabited little island surrounded by endless sea. The original memories were blurred now. It had been his rum member who had been a native of the island kingdoms. Yet what he remembered all fit. The high sun, the intoxicating humidity of the air, the heat soaking through his paws. Paradise. The rum aspect that still lived within him was most joyous of all. The years seemed to melt away. Part of him had come home. They helped Greenstalk down to the ground. Ravna claimed the Skrota was an inferior imitation, its new wheels an ad hoc addition. Still, Pilgrim was impressed. The four balloon tires each had a separate axle. The rider was able to make it almost to the crest of the coral without any help from Ravna or himself. But near the top, where the tropic ferns were thickest and their roots grew across every path, there he and Ravna had to help a bit, lifting and pulling. Then they were on the other side and could see the ocean. Now part of Pilgrim ran ahead, partly to find the easiest descent, partly to get close to the water and smell the salt and the rotting floatweed. The tide was nearly out now, and a million little pools, some no more than stony-walled puddles, lay exposed to the sun. Three of him ran from pool to pool, eyeing the creatures that lay within. The strangest things in the world, they had seemed to him when he first came to the islands. Creatures with shells, slugs of all dimensions and colors, animal plants that would become tropic ferns if they ever got trapped far enough inland.
"Where would you like to sit?"
he asked the scrotorider.
"If we go all the way out to the surf right now, you'll be a meter underwater at high tide."
The rider didn't reply. But all her fronds were angled toward the water now. The wheels on her scrotus slipped and spun with a strange lack of coordination.
"Let's take her closer," Ravna said after a moment. They reached a fairly level stretch of coral, pocked with holes and gullies, not more than a few centimeters deep.
"I'll go for a swim, find a good place," Peregrine said.
All of them ran down to where the coral broke the water. Going for a swim was not something you did by parts.
Heh heh.
Fact was, damn few mainland packs could swim and think at the same time. Most mainlanders thought that there was a craziness in water. Now Peregrine knew it was simply the great difference in sound speed between air and water. Thinking with all tympana immersed must be a little like using the radio cloaks. It took discipline and practice to do it, and some were never able to learn. But the island folk had always been great swimmers, using it for meditation. Ravna even thought the packs might be descended from packs of whales. Peregrine came to the edge of the coral and looked down. Suddenly the surf did not seem a completely friendly thing. He would soon find out if Rum's spirit and his own memories of swimming were up to the real thing. He pulled off his jacket. All at once. It's best done all at once. He gathered himself and plopped awkwardly into the water. Confusion, heads out and in. Keep all under. He paddled about, holding all his heads down. Every few seconds, he'd poke a single nose into the air and refresh that member. I still can do it. The six of him slipped through swarms of squidlets, dived separately through arching green fronds. The hiss of the sea was all around, like the mind sound of a vast sleeping pack. After a few minutes, he'd found a nice level spot, sand all about and shielded from the worst fury of the sea. He paddled back to where the sea crashed against stony coral and almost broke some legs scrambling out. It was just impossible to exit all at once, and for a few moments it was every member for itself.
"Hi, over here," he shouted to Greenstalk and Ravna.
He sat licking at coral cuts as they crossed the white rock.
"Found a place more peaceful than this."
He waved at the crash and spray. Greenstalk rolled a little closer to the edge, then hesitated. Her fronds turned back and forth along the curving sweep of the shore.
"Does she need help?"
Pilgrim started forward, but Ravna just sat down beside the rider and leaned against the wheeled platform. After a moment, Pilgrim joined them. They sat for a time, human looking out to the sea, rider looking he wasn't sure quite where, and pack looking in most all directions. There was peace here, even with, or because of, the booming surf and the haze of spray. He felt his heart slowing and just lazed in the sunlight. On every pelt, the drying seawater was leaving a glittery powder of salt. Grooming himself tasted good at first, but, yuck, too much dry salt was one of the bad memories. Greenstalk's fronds settled lightly across him, too fine and narrow to provide much shade, but a light and gentle comfort. They sat for a long while, long enough so that later some of Pilgrim's noses were blistered, and even dark-skinned Ravna was sunburned. The rider was humming now, a sort of song that, after long minutes, came to be speech.
"It is a good sea, a good edge. It is what I need now, to sit and think at my own pace for a while."
And Ravna said,
"How long? We will miss you."
That was not just politeness. Everyone would miss her. Even with her mind adrift, Greenstalk was the expert on OOB's surviving automation.
"Long by your measure, I fear. A few decades."
She watched, the waves a few minutes more.
"I am eager to get down there, ha-ha. Almost like a human in that."
Ravna, you know my memories are muddled now. I had 200 years with Blue Shell. Sometimes he was petty and a little spineful, but he was a great trader. We had many wonderful times, and at the end, even you could see his courage.
Ravna nodded.
We found a terrible secret on this last journey. I think that hurt him as much as the final burning. I am grateful to you for protecting us. Now I want to think, to let the surf and the time work with my memories and sort them out. Maybe if this poor imitation Scrota is up to it, I'll even make a chronicle of our quest.
She touched Peregrine on two of his heads.
One thing, Sir Pilgrim. You trust much to give me freedom of your seas, but you should know Blue Shell and I were pregnant. I have a mist of our common eggs within me. Leave me here, and there will be new riders by this island in future years. Please do not take that as betrayal. I want to remember Blue Shell with children, but modestly. Our kind has shared 10 million worlds and never been bad neighbors, except in a way that Ravna can tell you that cannot happen here.
In the end, Greenstalk was not at all interested in the protected stretch of water that Peregrine had discovered. She wanted, of all the places here, the one where the ocean crashed most ferociously. It took them more than an hour to find a path down to that violent place, and another half hour to get Ryder and Scrota safely into the water. Peregrine didn't even try to swim here. The coral rock came in close from all sides, slimy green in patches, razor-jagged in others. 5 minutes in that meat grinder, and he might be too weak to get out. Strange that there was so much green in the water here. It was all but opaque with seagrasses and swarms of foam midges. Ravna was a little better off. At the water's greatest height, she could still keep feet to ground, at least most of the time. She stood in the foam, bracing herself with feet and an arm, and helped the Scrotaling over the lip of rock. Once in, the mechanical crashed firmly to the bottom beside the human. Ravna looked up at Pilgrim, made an okay gesture. Then she huddled down for a moment, holding to the Scrota to keep her place. The surf crashed over the two, obscuring all but Greenstalk's standing fronds. When the foam moved back, he could see that the lower fronds draped across the human's back, and hear a voter buzzing that wasn't quite intelligible against all the other noise. The human stood and slogged through the waist-deep water toward the rocks Peregrine occupied. Peregrine grabbed onto himself, reached down to give Ravna some paws. She scrambled up the slime green and coral white. He followed the limping two legs toward the crest of tropical ferns. They stopped under the shade, and she sat down, leaned back into the mat of a fern's trunk net. Cut and bruised, she looked almost as hurt as Johanna ever had.
You okay?
Yeah.
She ran her hands back through disheveled hair, then she looked at him and laughed.
We both look like casualties.
Yes.
Sometime soon he needed a freshwater bath. He looked around and out. From the crest of the atoll ring, they had a view of Greenstalk's niche. Ravna was looking down there, too, minor injuries forgotten.
How can she like that spot? Peregrine said wonderingly. Imagine being smashed and smashed and smashed.
There was a smile on Ravna's face, but she kept her two eyes on the surf.
There are strange things in the universe, Pilgrim. I'm glad there are some you have not read about yet. Where the surf meets the shore, lots of neat things can happen there. You saw all the life that floated in that madness. Just as plants love the sun, there are creatures that can use the energy differences down at that edge. There they have the sun and the surge and the richness of the suspension. Still, we should keep watch a little longer.
Between each end surge of the waves, they could still see Greenstalk's fronds. He already knew that those limbs weren't strong, but he was beginning to realize that they must be very tough.
She'll be okay, though that cheap Scrota may not last long.
Poor Greenstalk may end up without any automation at all. She and her children, the lowest of all riders.
Ravna turned to look at the pack. There was still that smile on her face, wondering, yet pleased.
You know the secret Greenstalk spoke of?
Woodcarver told me what you told her.
I'm glad. Surprised, she was willing to let Greenstalk come here. Medieval minds, sorry, most any minds, would want to kill before taking even the faintest risk with something like this.
Then why did you tell the Queen
about the Scrota's perversion?
It's your world. I was tired of playing God with the secret, and Greenstalk agreed. Even if the Queen had refused, Greenstalk could have used a cold box on the OOB.
And likely slept forever.
But Woodcarver didn't refuse. Somehow she understood what I was saying. It's the true Scrotas that can be perverted, but Greenstalk no longer has one of those. In a decade, this island's shore will be populated with hundreds of young riders, but they would never colonize beyond this archipelago without permission of the locals. The risk is vanishing. But I was still surprised Woodcarver took it.
Peregrine settled down around Ravna, only one pair of eyes still watching the rider's fronds down in the foam. Best to give some explanation. He cocked a head at Ravna.
Oh, we are medieval, Ravna, even if changing fast now. We admired Blue Shell's courage in the fire. Such deserves reward, and medieval types are used to courting treachery. So what if the risk is of cosmic size? To us here, it is no more deadly for that. We poor primitives live with deadly risk all the time.
Ha! Huh. Her smile spread at his flippant tone.
End of Side 16. Change Side Selector Switch. This book is continued on the next cassette.